and we'll, you just, why don't we just come around this way, and you can wait, either sitting here or standing, and if you have questions, it might take a minute or two to kind of digest that all, and then think about some of the things from the first talk, second talk, and we'll do that till we're done.
Yeah, do we have any brave souls who... Is it more embarrassing to speak on the topic of sex or ask a question about it? Well, I'd point her to her pastors, of course. Unless you guys sort that one out. No, it's a great question. And yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, that's exactly what happens is you teach on something like this and then somebody walks away, you know, thinking right along those lines. And there's a lot of different ways to sort of tackle that issue. My argument would not be that no woman can ever be a neurosurgeon. But what I would say is, you know, things that feminism will tell you, like, and I'll talk about this a little bit tomorrow when I talk about femininity. But, you know, the feminist narrative is you can have it all. So you can be the neurosurgeon and you can raise a family, you know, and so you can have this total package. And what I would want to say is, you know, you really can't. Nobody can have it all. I mean, men can't have it all. Women can't have. Nobody can have it all. You have to make choices, and choices always involve trade-offs. And so you have to prioritize. And you really should think. And I think a lot of times women start to figure this out too late in life. But I think one way we can help is by, you know, helping younger women think through what is going to be most conducive to your long-term happiness. You know, do you really want to work the really long hours that it takes to claw your way to the top of this or that field? Is that going to really be what satisfies you? Or is it going to be something else? I mean, the reality is the vast majority of women, even today, you know, even with, you know, now several generations of feminist brainwashing, still most women, if given the opportunity, would work less than they do. Many women who do work outside the home do so because they think they have to out of financial necessity, and a lot of times they may. I'm not arguing with that, and I don't think it's wrong for a woman to work outside the home under any and all circumstances. But in terms of the priorities, and again, this is getting into something I'll talk about more tomorrow, but in terms of a woman's priorities and in terms of what will be most fulfilling to her, most women at some point in their lives come to recognize that actually my children are a much greater source of happiness than my job. And one thing I think we can do is help younger women understand that, you know, unless you're a pretty rare exception, and there are exceptions, but unless you're a really rare exception, that's going to be you too. And so start to plan out your life in such a way that you'll have a much more sort of child-friendly path. I mean, if you go to med school, and let's say you take out a bunch of debt to go be a neurosurgeon, and you're into your early 30s before you're even really practicing, and then you got to make money to pay off the debt that you accumulated, well, by the time you actually are done with all of that, you're almost out of your fertility window. Okay, well, so then what? So I think helping people, and again, I'm going to talk about this some tomorrow, but helping young people, and this is true for men and women both, but maybe especially women in this particular area, helping women really think through what is your long-term plan and why do you think that your life plan needs to look like a man's? Why do you think that? Do you really think there's no difference here? And do you really think that career is going to mean the same thing to you that it would mean to a man, and that you will view having children the same way that a man does? A couple more anecdotes, and then we can move on from this. But I've seen it's not hard to find this kind of thing on the internet. Articles from women who got into their 30s and then realized what mistakes they made, and then they end up writing an article or, you know, something to the effect that basically, you know, this is why I left feminism, or, you know, I'm angry because the feminists lied to me, and I'm not that happy with my career, and lots of my friends have children, and, you know, I wish I did too. I've just got a bunch of, you know, papers I published, or, you know, degrees hanging on, you know, diplomas hanging on the wall, that kind of thing. I wish I had children. So there's that angle to it. It's not hard to find those kind of stories of regret where people just say, look, this is what I was told to pursue. I was told I could do anything. I could do anything a man can do. So I set out to do whatever a man might do. And now I'm realizing that, you know, I've got a lot of regret because I missed out. I missed out. And you'll find, you know, women who are in their mid-30s saying, well, where have all the good men gone? Because they're not married and they've been pursuing a career all these years. And, well, you know, there were a lot of good men back in your 20s. And you passed them over because you were so focused on your career. So again, it's, you know, it's unfortunate somebody didn't help you see, you know, the decisions you needed to make, and that your prospects for marriage were much better earlier in life than they are now. And that doesn't mean it can't happen for you, but it just means it's much more difficult. You know, so better late than never, but even better to get this figured out early on. So those are the kind of things that, you know, that's the kind of conversation I would want to have. And you know, you can anchor that in all kinds of ways to things in the scripture, specific instructions that that Paul gives to women in places like Titus 2 or Proverbs 31 that I'll touch on some tomorrow. But that's the kind of answer I would want to give.
So before you actually move on from this point, I did want to ask, to extend Andrew's question, as sometimes that belief that you do need to have a job as a woman is culturally driven, and I think that can be a very strong pull on a woman when she feels like she's dishonoring her family or not. You know, let's say she's an only child and it's her responsibility as she's grown up to feel like she's responsible to take care of her parents and bring them a good name and rapport. I feel like that can just bring an extra level of complexity when you're talking to someone about, hey, look, you know, you're going to be unhappy pursuing this career, but that's actually tied to honoring their parents. So how would you...
Yeah, I mean, I think if there's an obligation there to help out parents financially and that kind of thing, I would say do it, you know, as much as you're able. But I guess what I would say is when it comes to this particular issue of women working outside the home, I would say this is just my advice. I mean, I could point you to biblical passages, but, you know, anything the scripture says about this, we have to adapt to our circumstances. So, for example, in Titus 2, when Paul says that, you know, older women are to teach the younger women in the church how to be homemakers, you know, workers at home. What did it mean to be a worker at home in the first century? Our homes don't fulfill all the functions. Just to give you an example, I mean, one of the things that would have meant in the first century context is caring for aging parents in the home, because they would have, you know, maybe moved in with you or something like that. I mean, that kind of thing would have happened a lot more than it happens today. Our lives are not structured that way. And we could ask, maybe they should be, but generally they're not. Okay, but we still could ask, okay, so what would it mean? What does that translate over into today? Because if our households don't perform all the functions that a first century household performed, then we can't just say, well, you just have to stay at home no matter what. I don't think that's the answer. So I don't think that women can never work outside the home. My wife works outside the home now, but when our kids were little, she did. You know, she was home with them. And that's what I would encourage women is that, again, scripture and science both tell us that those early years of a child's life are the most formative in all kinds of ways. And that if a woman can invest herself in her kids when they're young without, or I'll just say with minimal distraction, that's really best for the kids. And I think it will also be very fulfilling for her. Whether she works, you know, inside the home or outside the home before or after those years, I don't think is a huge deal one way or the other. I mean, I think there's a lot of benefits that society derives from having women who are committed to homemaking. I mean, I think about my own childhood and, we would wander around the neighborhood and, if it got to be lunchtime, you would just stop off at the nearest house and there was a mom there to make lunch for you. And it provided great community and hospitality. But and that was a typical suburban neighborhood in the 1980s. Today, suburban neighborhoods are absolutely desolate during the day because both parents work in almost every home. And so where are kids? Well, they're not out there wandering the streets because nobody wants them to do that. So childhood is completely changed because we don't have moms who are committed to mothering when the kids are still young. And again, not every situation, I realize that life is complicated. So not every situation is going to be ideal. Sometimes like I said, every choice is a trade-off. You may have to, give something up to make something else happen that needs to happen. And you have other obligations besides just those to your kids. But I would just stress to mothers, and of course to their husbands as well, who are, who have a huge hand in this and leading the way, you just don't get those years back with young kids. And so if there's any way that you can devote yourself in a really single-hearted kind of way to being, their mom during those years, I think that's great. I think that's ideal. If you've got other obligations that you have to take care of, you've got to do that. I mean, that's how life is. Life is often very messy, and we don't always get, the ideal that we might want. But that's one thing that I think really has to be recognized, that again, going back to what I said earlier, that I don't think feminists have really been honest about, and that is every choice is a trade-off. You really can't have it all. So you got to think about what all, your whole package of obligations are and then how you can best fulfill them. And that may include obligations to, for a woman to your husband and to your children and to aging parents. And there may also be, financial issues that have to be dealt with in the household one way or another. So there may be any number of things you have to deal with, and then that doesn't even get us into, ways in which you want to serve in your church or serve in your neighborhood and those kinds of things. So you can see how these things really start to stack up. And you can't tell anybody what they ought to do in terms of those without knowing more about a specific situation. But I would just say, remember that every choice is a trade-off. God's not going to put you under greater obligation than you can handle, but just recognize that, the center of a woman's calling, at least when her children are young, is to be a mom to those kids and make the most of that opportunity because that window closes pretty quickly with those kids. So I don't know if that helps answer your question.
I think I should have added a little context. I was thinking, I taught Chinese students a couple of years ago, and there was one female in class, and they're around 15 years old, and I just saw in her this deep feeling of responsibility for parents to take over their business in China. And I'm just, I cared about her, I cared about all my students, and I'm just wondering how I would go about having a conversation, even if it wasn't like addressing her directly, just saying, have you ever considered that there's more than taking over your parents' business? Or,
yeah.
It seemed like that was the total end goal, and I might be able to see those things as valuable, and have that conversation and express genuine, desire for her to have a good life. But then she's the one who has to go back to China and tell her parents, I decided not to do this. I decided I wanted to be a mother. And so that's just kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I mean, is that something that her parents want her to do or something that they really, really need her to do? I mean, there's a lot of things there that would probably have to be, teased out. But yeah, I mean, the way you word it is great. What would happen if she went back and said, you know, what I really want to be is a mother, and I don't want to work in this, you know, business? I mean, that, you know, that'd be a great question to ask in that kind of situation, just to kind of help, you know, to help that particular woman start to think through kind of what, you know, what is going to be the best way to live life, and what is God calling me to, and how do I see God's design, you know, what I can see about God's design for women in a sort of broad, generic way. How do I see that applying specifically to my life in these circumstances? So.
Thank you very much. I'm not quite sure how to phrase the question. There's a little bit of context in terms of how to talk into it. So I think I agree, or I've heard a lot of what you said about women and how they want to go and be career-oriented and find success, and then they have these sort of realizations in their mid-30s around there or earlier about what to do. One thing I maybe I've noticed is that I have personal experiences of women who have done this sort of thing and gone for a certain amount of time to be a career woman, and they give up opportunities of men for the sake of their career. And a lot of times I see that they seem to really want what appears to be maybe a sort of honor. Either honoring parents is one thing, or trying to get an honor for them, but like they maybe feel that's one thing that success is, but also being like a classical school teacher for a time, I noticed that oftentimes most of these female students are much more very focused on pleasing the teacher, on being the one who finds them to be exceptional and things like that. And so it's kind of odd, because when I think about patriarchy and think about God's plan, I usually think of the man being the one who cares about honor. Mm-hmm. And so I'm wondering if you think this is accurate, if maybe in our culture and progressive feminism, there is now a emphasis of women desiring honor, which seems kind of like unusual and not very classic. If that is accurate, or you can talk about what it means for women now to be honor-driven to an extent, even though that's on a certain type, they're still
right, women's honor,
but what's going on there, if that's accurate.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great question. So I think when feminism, you know, in its earlier phases, you know, the push in feminism was basically to, you know, for women to have all the same opportunities and basically be able to replicate a man's life, you know, basically for women to live like men and adopt a man's pattern for life. And the thinking was, well, that's where the real honor is. That's where the real value is. That's where the real worth is. Okay? So one thing I would say right there at that juncture, one thing we really need to do is make sure that we honor those wifely and motherly roles that I think are most central, the ones that are connected to being fruitful and multiplying. I think we really need to honor motherhood and value motherhood and I mean, it's a glorious thing in Scripture. And again, I'll talk about this some tomorrow. So there's that element to it. So that's one thing we need to do. One of the ways, I think, to help women grow in contentment in the things that God has called them to do most centrally, again, not exclusively, but most centrally, is through glorifying and honoring those vocations that have to do with, you know, being a wife and a mother. But going back to what I was saying about the earlier waves of feminism or earlier instances of feminism, feminism said, okay, women need to become more like men. And so women began to masculinize and kind of imitate. I mean, even in the sexual revolution, the idea was, oh, well, we women want to be able to have sex like a man, which basically meant to have sex and then not regret it afterwards, you know, to basically deny their nature. Well, the reality is men don't have sex like men in that particular way of thinking. I mean, because fornication damages men too. It damages women differently because, again, we are different. But, I mean, it damages both men and women. So there was a myth there that women bought into that was very, very damaging. But they also said things like, we want to have careers like men, you know, basically imitate the sort of traditional man's pattern of life. And one of the feminists, I forget which one it was, but you know, at one point she said, we become like the men we wanted to marry. Okay, well, that's true, they did. Problem is, no men wanted to marry those women because men don't want to marry an image of themselves. They don't want to marry somebody masculine. They want to marry somebody feminine. So women who adopted that particular life path were less attractive to men. But there's something else that happened. And again, I'll get into this maybe a little bit more tomorrow. But women started to masculinize. But the reality is women could never become fully like men. So then what had to start to happen is men had to be, you know, women have been masculinizing, but they can't become fully like men. So then what you have to really complete the process is you have to have men feminize. As women are becoming more like men, you know, they can't get the whole way there. Well, then let's start to make men more like women. And so then you have, so feminism didn't necessarily start off with sort of this androgynous ideal, but over time, that's largely what it became, is men and women basically becoming androgynous, sexlessly interchangeable, where you have a unisex culture. That's basically the idea. And that's just a disaster for men and women both. So what we need to recover is what true womanhood looks like and what true manhood looks like. And there is a glory in both of those. Men and women have different glories, but they're both glorious. So hopefully that helps.
It turned out that as he was answering the first question, he answered the second two that were listed. If you have a question, though, it's probably sometimes it happens. You kind of start realizing there are other things you want to ask. It is 9 o'clock, a lot of that time. And we will have more time for question and answer tomorrow. So if you have something you'd like to bring up, we'll hopefully see all of you again.